Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to another episode of The Real with Sage Single Moms. It is her, she, me, your girl, Miss Jennifer Pink, guest hosting today with the one and only Nye. Say hi, Nye.
Hey, guys.
So we are back today to discuss domestic violence and single moms. But before we get deep into the discussion, because I know this is a tough, touchy subject and a very needed subject, I want to introduce our special guest today. Today we are joined by Miss Candy Lewis. Say hi, Candy.
Good morning.
Candy Lewis is the CEO of the Positive Results Corporation, a masterful trainer, facilitator, certified domestic violence and sexual assault prevention advocate. Candy specializes in trauma awareness, creating healthy relationships, and developing youth peer advocates. Candy partners with the National Association of Sisters of Color Ending Sexual Assault, California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, and Women of Color Network, and a founding board member for South Los Angeles Homeless Tay and Foster Care Collaborative, to name a few. She also partners with and provides training to K through 12 schools, colleges, cities, governmental and private organizations, elected officials, community and faith-based organizations, nonprofit agencies, and utility companies. Candy has received numerous awards and honors, including 2014 Woman of Distinction, 2015 Woman of the Year Award, 2016 Humanitarian Award, 2017 Woman of the Year in Education from Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors and Commission for Women, and 2017 one of the most influential African Americans in Los Angeles Mover and Shaker category. She has been a planning commissioner for the Harbor Gateway North Neighborhood Council and was vice president of sales and interim president of a technology company. A Los Angeles native married for 35 years, she and her husband have three adult children. Candy, when I grow up, I just want to be as awesome as you.
Come on now.
Yes. How you put me behind that right there?
Like, I can't wait to see what award you win in 2018.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Look, I tell you, I do what God tells me to do. I go what God tells me to go.
Amen.
And then everything comes to me because I'm only here to be a blessing to other people. And because I do that, I get blessed.
Amen, amen,
and
amen.
That was awesome. Yes. Put me behind her.
I mean, I think you're pretty awesome as
awesome.
Well. I mean, you're still awesome.
Awesome. Oh, definitely. She is who I want to be like. Like, yes. Amazing,
you know,
Candy.
I put it out there, so I also mentor women who are looking to start businesses or to move from where they were to where they are and where they could possibly be. So if somebody
Uh-oh.
Needs some help, needs some guidance,
Uh-oh,
you have
Lord.
A question, hit me up.
I know it, yes.
Jesus is talking. Uh-oh, y'all. Uh-oh.
I hear that connection, Lord. Come on now.
Did you catch it? Did you catch it?
I caught it.
No, I don't want to butcher your name again.
Show.
I don't want to butcher your name. Say your name for me. Danielle.
Yeah.
Okay. See, I don't want to butcher it, y'all, so I got to ask. Danielle Smith is a game changer. She is a survivor, a thriver of domestic violence, and knows the effects it can have on kids and families firsthand. From having a gun placed to her head and told she would be killed if she left, having two plates in her eyes currently to hold her cornea in place from being hit, or the effects it had on her children, she experienced it firsthand. Danielle is a CASA, court-appointed special advocate for children advocates with the Marion County Juvenile System, family support liaison for grades K through 12 at a charter school that covers the whole state of Indiana, and she is a strong, strong believer in God as an active leader in her church. She has an associate degree in business management and a bachelor's of science in human services with a concentration in child and family welfare. A contributing author of When a Woman's Fed Up, you already know, using her voice as a game changer. In addition, she is a 2016 Domestic Violence Advocacy Award winner. Her passion is to save our kids and help them live the life as a teen should be able to live with no worries or concerns about teen dating abuse and or domestic violence. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Now that we have introduced you to our special guests, our experts, we're just going to jump right on into this topic because there is so much to cover. There are so many different ways we could go with this. But let's just, you know, talk about the truth of it. It doesn't affect just the mother. It affects the whole family. So what do you guys have to say about the effects of it as far as when you're a single mom, you're a victim of domestic violence, you're in a domestic violence situation? Because I think for mothers sometimes we don't care about ourselves, but we care about our kids, and we will fight tooth and nail for our kids, and we will fight for ourselves when it's for our kids, so to speak. So what can you tell them about how it affects our children?
Well, I guess I'll speak first. Oh, okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, Candy.
Go ahead. So, Danielle, you go ahead because you are amazing, and I love you. First, let me say this to not only Danielle but everyone who has survived domestic violence. My hat is off to you because people do not know how difficult it is and what strength you have to move forward in face of everything. So go, girl.
Thank you.
Go, girl.
Thank you. Thank you. To that question at hand, going through domestic violence, you're correct. You don't think about yourself more so, but think about what in my situation, I didn't think about myself. I was more so thinking about what my children seen or what they didn't see. Majority of my domestic violence, they didn't see the physical. However, because of the emotional abuse and the arguments that I kept getting into, when I went into my dark spot, it was more so of taking away from my kids. So when I was in my dark zone is what I would call it, then my kids were being neglected with the love, the love that they should have been poured upon to, or, you know, the questions that they had that would just be more so of ask me later. So those are some of the things. And then once I learned what domestic violence was, because I went through it for 8 years before I even knew what domestic violence was. I knew that he shouldn't have been hitting me. However, I didn't know the cycle of abuse. I didn't know all the abuse stages, and I didn't know the different abuses. I just knew the physical abuse. So once I was able to get out of it, then I seen the effects that it had on my children, and not the effects of just so of them gaining maybe the anger or gaining the argumentative part of it, but it was more so the effects in school and how my youngest daughter, which is her father, became very antisocial. Her grades decreased. She started, you know, she was one of the bedwetters. It was so many things that I had seen that I thought that when we needed an IEP for school, which is it's an individualized education plan, so basically like special education students, when I asked for that and I got that, once I started rebuilding myself as a mother and as a woman first and then went back to my children, I realized that nothing was wrong with her mentally. It was just the side effects that came from the domestic violence. So then I had to go in and unlearn what she learned from domestic violence and then reteach her what healthy love was and show her what healthy love was. And then eventually now she's a straight-A student. So it's just crazy, you know, how the effects of domestic violence can affect them then, but it can also affect them in so many other areas.
What I like to bring to the table is, you said something very powerful, Danielle, is that you didn't know what domestic violence was. We, as African Americans, have only recently heard this term, domestic violence. We know what violence is. We know what abuse is. But we never thought it was happening to us because that's not a term we're familiar with. We're familiar with seeing maybe someone in our family on Friday night, there's the party, there's the fish fry, there's the drinking, the smoking, and then you hear the cheers move back, you hear the hollering, you hear the screaming, and somebody's being hit, and people are hollering, and then the next day, there's the love, there's the flowers,
back to normal.
Apologies, mm-hmm. because we didn't know what domestic violence was. We just thought this was normal.
Normal.
And so
yeah.
it becomes normal to people to experience this violence and abuse, and then we try and hide it from our children and act
mm-hmm.
like they don't know what's going on. But our children
mm-hmm.
are very intuitive. They know exactly what's going on. But how it impacts the children is at first we sometimes as abuse victims, and I've been an abuse victim. I lived for years in an abusive relationship verbally, didn't know it, but then I became abusive. And what happens is we abuse our children because we
mm-hmm.
scream and holler at them.
Yep.
And we don't realize that they're going through the exact same things that we go through.
I agree with that 100%. And one of the things that threw me off, because I stayed silent for so many years, like my family didn't even know. So when I got my eye fractured and had to get surgery, I told my family that because I had gotten in a car accident when I was pregnant with this child. So when 4 weeks after she was born is when I got my eye fractured, and then I had to go to surgery that next month, I told them that it was in regards to the car accident. So I held it from my family for so long that when I did end up using my voice and coming out, that's when my mother told me that's why her jaw was wired when I was a kid. I never knew why her jaw was wired when I was a kid, but I knew, but I just knew it was wired, and I never knew what it was. So not only was it a chain attached to me from domestic violence, I had told my mother, you know, that was that opportunity where you could have talked to me as a growing up, you know, as your only daughter, to be able to tell me what I should look for in a person. But she herself didn't know what domestic violence was. So, you know, it goes from generation to generation until we actually break that chain and educate our children on it once we're educated on it. Because I survived, and I was quick to say, you know, I survived, I'm a survivor, but I also had to turn right back around and get back in there with my children so that they could be survivors as well, being a single parent. Because we stayed together for 12 years. It was a total of 10 years of abuse and 12 years together. However, through being with him, I was still a single parent because I did every single thing on my own. So from doctor's appointments, school appointments, every single thing, activities, I did it by myself. So it was still being, some women think being a single parent is you live by yourself, you do everything by yourself, but you can be a single parent and still live in the same household as a child's father.
That's real. And even if that your abuser, let me just put it like that, because I'm not going to call them your spouse or your partner, that's your abuser. Your abuser will use your children against you and will
yes.
try and hurt you through your children and keep
yes.
you straight through your children by intimidation and violence mm-hmm. and abuse. And so we have to be aware of how that violence is impacting our children. Are our children also being beat? Are our children also being threatened?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we sometimes think, well, if I just take this abuse, that won't bother my child. But even if your child is never hit, every time
mm-hmm.
you are hit, every time
mm-hmm.
you are pushed in a corner, every time you are cussed out, so is your child. Your child
yeah.
experiences those same things and lives through that violence, and that fear becomes embedded into their soul, and it never leaves them. They will remember this when they are 50, 60, 70 years old. They will
yep.
remember the sound that you made crying in the corner. They'll remember
mm-hmm.
how scared you were and how afraid they were. And so we have to break this curse, and I'm so glad you mentioned how your mom had experienced it, because we don't talk about how our mothers, our sisters, our aunts, our grandmothers, our great-grandmothers have all experienced the same abuse, but because of shame and blame, we don't talk about it. And we act like if we don't speak the words, then it really didn't happen. And not only did it happen, but it stays with us forever.
And then I would even add on to, you have to know what when you're sending your children with their friends and their BFFs and all of those, you have to make sure that you know that family, because you may not have a history of domestic violence, but because you allow them to go over to their best friend's house so much and there's a history of domestic violence in there, but they love their best friend so much that they don't want to say nothing because you'll take them away from there, that chain could still get attached from the exposure of another home as well. So you want to make sure that you know where you're sending your children and that they're not being traumatized by where they're going and not saying anything just because they want to continue to be able to be friends with that person and, you know, not be removed from their life.
And the way you do that is to talk to your children, encourage them and motivate them, let them know first and foremost that they are loved, you know, and not just verbally. Don't just tell them that verbally. Show them that, because, see, we could talk one talk, but your actions speak volumes. And so you show them how much you love them and engage them in conversation and ask them questions. Kids love to talk. They love one thing, if you don't know as a parent now, whether your child is newborn or 30 years old, we like to engage with our parents. And what happens is, because of the abuse, we go into the silent mode. We also put our children in silence, and we often tell them to shut up. And so when something important comes up, they don't feel comfortable sharing because we've already set the stage to tell them that their voice is not important. So always keep those lines of conversation open and talk to them and ask them questions and let them know what's going on. And even if there's, like you said, there's no violence in your house, talk to them about the violence. Articles that you may see in the newspaper, discuss them with your children. And depending on their age will determine the level of conversation. But still, you can always have a conversation with a child, even as young as 3 and 4 and 5 years old.
I was going to say, and I agree with that now, because if my children weren't in school, if I put them on the phone, they would be able to have this exact conversation with you guys in reference to domestic violence and in reference to teen dating abuse as well, just because I made sure that I wasn't the only one with a voice at the home, but that they also had a voice, they were educated on it, and not be bitter about the situation. So I had to make sure that I wasn't walking in bitterness and unforgiveness, because I then wouldn't be able to openly and wholly teach them about domestic violence because I had experienced it, or about teen dating abuse. I wouldn't have been able to give them that 100% raw truth if I was still holding bitterness and unforgiveness in my heart. And then that last thing that she was touching on in reference to speaking and communicating with your children, I believe society has made it real hard on parents because they have this thing of don't be friends with your children. I think there's a line between that, because disrespect and being friends with your children is two different things. And a child won't tell you or communicate with you as much if you're not their friend. They have to feel like you are a friend as well as a parent. So there are times when I come to my children that I have to take off that mother hat and be that advocate and be that friend. But they also know that that still comes with no disrespect. You know, that still comes with that this is my mother. However, I can still talk to her and bring that worry and bring that concern and bring whatever it is that I feel that I'm lacking or worried about to my mother. So I really like how she said that.
You know, what's interesting is my daughter is 13, and, you know, she's at that age where she smells her Wheaties. But it's so interesting, because the other day she came to me and she said, I wish you were my best friend, like, and she literally said, like, the white kids. And I looked at her and I said, okay, well, what is a best friend? And she was just, like, stuck, and she couldn't answer me. And so I said to her, I said, my best friends are the ones who protect me, keep it real with me, and tell me the truth. Those are my best friends. I said, so when you think about it, I said, do I not always try to protect you? do I not always tell you the truth, even when you don't like it, even when you don't want to hear it? I said, do I not always try to help you see the greatness in you and not so much focus on what they doing or what he's doing? And she was like, yeah. And I said, that's the difference. I said, you're looking for a best friend who's like, hey, girl, and let's talk about people together. But how does that uplift you? How does that make you great? I'm your best friend who's going to keep it real with you. And like you said, and then there's that disrespect line, like, I'm your friend, but don't come talking to me like you talk to them little girls at school. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think that we have to really retrain the word friend and best friend with our children, because I think that we've gotten away from what a friend really does, you know. Mm-hmm. And I look at it like, you know, I'm a survivor as well of domestic violence, and I had two friends who knew what was going on. And now I look at it and I go, I don't know that they were really my friends, because they never loved me enough to say, you are worth more than this. You are greater than this. You don't have to live this life. You know what I mean? They were just, mm-hmm. They were just like, oh, okay, that's what happened. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Are you okay? You know, like it was, I don't know if they were just afraid to stand up and love me enough, or if they just didn't know what to say, or what the situation kind of was. But I look at it now and I go, real friendship is when we are willing to stand up for one another and protect one another sometimes. And if that means, you know, like I've heard stories of situations where people's sister or people's friend or people's mother had to say, you're not going to hit her today. You know, and just be that protection. And I think sometimes we need that. Like, we need to know that we are worthy of someone's love, that they are willing to protect us when we can't protect ourselves. So I just totally, you know, just thrown that in there.
Well, let me give you my two cents on what you said. So mm-hmm. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. First mm-hmm. off, we don't know what they were dealing with in their own relationship. Sometimes as friends, we show up and we don't tell each other about the abuse that we are experiencing. And because we also are living in that, we don't know how we're presenting it to others. And sometimes people are afraid to say, girl, you know, you shouldn't do that, because we have seen where the messenger becomes the one who is beaten up. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times, I think the biggest issue is that people just don't know what to say or don't know what to do. And that's really a very difficult thing to say. And I just need to jump back to the kids for just a second and say, if you don't talk to your kids' parents, guaranteed somebody else will.
Someone else will,
and you
yeah.
don't know the message that they're going to give your babies. You know, so make sure that you always keep those lines of conversation up, even when you're hurting the most. Open up to your kids, and you don't have to tell them everything, but you do have to let them know that you're human and that you love them and that you hear their voice and you want to hear from them. So, now, and going back,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, just think about, you know, we sometimes put up so many barriers to our friends that when they see the violence and the abuse and we tell them, because we also don't say, you know what, I need help, so we don't know what to say. So that's why we're having this conversation today, so we could give people some ideas and suggestions on what they can do.
And I agree all the way. My daughter will be 16 this year. So when I tell you I got out of my domestic violence in 2014. So, God, when I tell you he was using me from 2012 to 2014 until I got out, he literally was using me. And in 2014 from now, you know, it's been a total transition. So it wasn't an easy transition those first 2 years. So from 2014
to 2016, it was a transition in my household to me molding and me trying to shape and me trying to really invest and dig into my children, because I knew there was a lot of years that I had to make up for with showing them what healthy was and educating them on what healthy was. And, you know, now it's just gotten to the point where my daughter can really just come to me, and even if she wanted to say something bad in reference to someone else, then that was my way to redirect her and to build her, because it's easier, and I always say this, where I go, it's easier to build a child than it is to rebuild an adult. So if I have all the opportunity and all the chance to get in their shoes, then that's typically what I do with my children, and I get at their level, and then I bring them up a level. It may be just one level, because they can't get to my level yet because I have too many years of levels, but to build them up to just that next level of seeing in a different way. And then when you speak on the friend thing was huge for me, because once I got out of it, God truly revealed how he divinely connected me with people. So I lost my true friends, because once I told them, they were the ones that were like, well, I say she was the one that was like, oh, no, I hate him. Forget that. We need to woo, woo, woo. And that wasn't the stage that I was in yet. I was still in love, and I still wanted to be with him. I still was hoping. I was still in denial. I was in the denial, that fear, that hope. So I was like, okay, let me remove you out of my life. So I removed my true friend for that temporary moment. And then God placed people in my life. I had one friend who I'm still friends with who got in with me. She was like, okay, since you're not getting out, I'm getting in it with you. So therefore, when I got chased with a high speed, at high speed with a shotgun out the window, that's who I called. We jumped in her car. He was chasing both of us. And not saying that was safe, but she was like, I'm all in it. I don't want you to be with him, but if you're going to stay, I'm going to be here. I'm going to be by your side. I'm going to put that ice on your black eye. I'm going to put that Vaseline on your scars. She was that friend. And then the other friend that I had, she was going through the same thing. So because I didn't tell my friend who was in it 100% with me, I didn't tell her everything. I told the one who was in something herself, who was in a domestic violence relationship herself, because we had something in common. So we could sit on the phone all day and tell how miserable we was. And, of course, nothing was being done. We weren't getting no better. We wasn't growing at all. We was just stuck and stagnant. But then once I was removed from the domestic violence situation, God removed the person who was in domestic violence with me. He removed her out of my life. And it wasn't because, oh, I'm out of it now, we're not going to be friends. But we literally fell off the face of the earth from each other. And of course, me not understanding it then, I'm trying to go back like, hey, but then my view was totally different from hers because she was still in it. So there was no connecting that we can do. We had nothing in common and we grew apart. But now the one that left at the beginning, my best friend who left at the beginning, now she's back in my life. And now she has an understanding of, oh, my God, I didn't know what the cycle was. I wouldn't have known what to do. So now she understands more of it because I'm able to educate her more on it, and I was able to educate. And now we like, you know, two peas in a pot. Like, we lock like glue, but it wasn't meant for her to be in my life then because she wouldn't have understood it. She wouldn't have understood anything. I lost more family than I did friends going through it, and that's just because they didn't understand it and they put their protective head on. So once I went back with him the umpteenth time, they kicked, you know, they judged and they threw bad names, you know, they did everything that we as victims don't want someone to do for us when we need them the most.
That's real.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. I'm listening to you guys. I commend all three of you. As I've spoken with Jennifer before, I've gone through, I don't know if this is the same category as domestic violence, but mine is different than I'm going through. I'm going through emotional and mental abuse. And I didn't know that that was a form of domestic violence until last year. I was just, you know, going through a real tough time, and I was just like, I just couldn't, you know, deal with it anymore. And someone referred me to the domestic violence hotline. I was just like, why? I'm not being hit. But I called anyway, and they said, you know, that is, you know, mental abuse, physical abuse, financial abuse, that is a part of domestic violence too. And I was just like, wow, all of these years I always hear about physical, but not knowing that it's way deeper than that also. I can say that I've gone through the domestic violence in a mental and emotional state since my daughter was born, which I didn't know that. I was used to being lashed out at from, you know, growing up. And how it was said earlier that children are, you know, put in it. He wouldn't necessarily, like, you know, do the same to my child, but he would threaten to take her from me. Like, that was his way of coming in between me and my child with, you know, oh, I'm going to take her from you and you're never going to see her again and things like that. And it was just like, okay, I'm not really understanding why my child's being taken away from me when I'm not a bad mother. But as I've gotten older, I've noticed that, and I started being like, how do I say it, numb to what he says. I basically learned that, okay, there's no way you can take my child from me. I'm not a bad mother. I don't abuse her. I'm not neglecting her. And then he will lie and say I neglect her also. Like, just what I'm trying to say is I would like for us to talk more about the actual, the emotional side of domestic violence, because a lot of people don't know about that. Like this, like last year, my aunt, she's a domestic violence advocate, and she had a celebration with her 50th as being a domestic violence survivor. So it was celebrating her life and bringing awareness to domestic violence. And I was hosting. And as I was doing my research, I didn't even know also that domestic violence can happen within your own family. So without me realizing it, I thought back and I'm like, I have been going through domestic violence since I was a kid with, you know, how my mother spoke to me, some of the things that she did, you know, to me that, you know, were very hurtful, and it, you know, kind of scarred me to, you know, me being an adult, that I had to, you know, try to work through that, and then me dealing with this with my daughter's father. Like, it's a reality that I didn't want to face. I was in denial about, like, okay, well, I'm not being hit, I'm not going through domestic violence, but I just recently had to understand that, yeah, you're going through some things and you have to push through it. And it's very hard. It's very hard because there's times where I'm going to come back in the same space as him, knowing what I'm about to be dealt with or what he's going to say, because I'm not doing what he wants me to do. So that control and manipulation also. But, you know, it's very hard. It's very, it's just the reality of it, and not being in denial about it, it's just really, like, I can't even express how that feels. I will always say that I would never be a person to go through domestic violence, but I have, unfortunately, since I was a child. So, yeah, I just, you know, people out there really don't think they go through domestic violence because it's not physical, but they actually do because of the emotions that come with it as well.
That's good. That's good. One of the things I can say from going through domestic violence for so long is that me having these plates in my eye, me having scratches on my neck, me knowing that the 357 was put to my head and told that I would be healed, me knowing those physical things happened were the easiest things to get rid of. You can't, if you looked at me today, you could not tell that there were plates in my eye. If you looked at me today, you could not tell that I ever had a scratch on my body. However, one of the hardest things for me to do was to rebuild my mind, to rebuild myself as a woman, and to emotionally build myself to who God has for me to be, that bold, strong woman. that was one of the things that I had to do. So I had to, you know, say things to myself, put things on my mirror. I had to speak life back into my life because so many bad weeds had been planted within me and around my seed that the weeds had overpowered. And when I say that, it's because, you know, when we put, you know, seeds in the ground, they grow. However, weeds grow quicker than seeds. So all those weeds that were implanted in my head had stuck. So I started to believe them. So then I had to pull those up and replant more seeds so that they can grow and I can water those seeds. We know that the emotional pattern is the put downs, the name calling, the yelling, the threats, and, you know, their words used to gain power and control over a victim. And if you don't understand what that emotional abuse is, it will gain power and control over you. And you as a woman will eventually start believing it. And then once you believe it, you're walking in this belief. And then eventually it's going to rub off on your kids, and then your kids is going to walk in this belief, and then it'll go from generation to generation until that chain is broke. So it definitely takes more to rebuild yourself from the physical, from the emotional more so than the physical. But you first have to identify that, you know, I was emotionally abused, and I, you know, this is not who I am. And then start telling yourself who you are and start believing and reading and prophesying who you are to yourself in order to be who, you know, you are supposed to be. So emotional abuse is real big in the communities.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where I've actually responded to how he would respond to me. And I didn't like that because that's not my character at all. I'm not a person of conflict or violence or anything like that, but, you know, some people just feel like, okay, they have to respond in a way, so, you know, as a way of protection. And that was my thought. Like, he would, you know, curse at me and say things, I'll curse right back at him. And I had to know that that's not the answer, even though I'm really, like, protecting myself because I don't have anybody else to protect me at the moment. So the only thing I knew was, okay, protect yourself back, do it to him. And it's really sad, but I just have to know, okay, you just have to respond in a different way. You have to respond in how you really are. I'm becoming a different person because of what's being said to me, so I feel like I got to say stuff back to hurt him. And that's not what you want to do because it hurts you even more. Like what was being said, like, I start to believe it. I did believe that I was a bad mother because you always, like, you know, tell me about, you know, come at me with my parenting. And I've never in my life had anybody do that. Well, I don't feel anybody should do that if there isn't anything seriously being done to the children. But I got to the point where I said, okay, well, maybe I am a bad mother. Like, maybe he should just take her and, you know, I'll give up my rights and I actually, like, just get out of her life. But I thought that I was really doing something to her, but it wasn't me doing anything to her. It was him putting those things in my head to make me believe it. And she's right. Eventually, you do start to believe that that's who you really are and you're not that. And thank God I had enough sense to not actually go through with that because I'm a good mother. I'm not perfect. You don't have there's no handbook to how to be a mother, but I'm a great mother to my daughter. My daughter loves me. My daughter, she is beautiful. Her personality is so big and bright. And for me to have even thought to just, you know, get my daughter up, that I never again in my life will I ever let anybody think that they can take my child away from me or take my parenting or my love for my child away from me. Never. Because I would miss out on her growing up. She's about to be 4. I would miss out on her being 4. I would miss out on all of that because of one person telling me something that I'm not. So, yeah, it really does affect you a lot. It's really a process on how to get your mind to think better than what you did before and get you to the place where you have confidence again, because that really, like, brought down my confidence even with my mother. Or people in my family that's supposed to be the adults. They, you know, the adults are supposed to be your protector. And when they would, you know, say mean things to me or whatever, I would feel like, you know, nobody liked me or nobody wanted to deal with me. And to be honest, that still kind of affects me to this day. It's not an emotional state, but in a way of, okay, I know this person said, it's a lot of people who don't even know that I know the things that they said about me. But when it comes to them, I'm just like, okay, I know how to, you know, deal with them. Let me not do this. Let me not do that. Because I feel like I'm a burden sometimes. I still do feel like I'm a burden sometimes because of what has been said to me or what has been said about me behind my back that I found out. And I'm just like, okay, wow, I didn't know that you felt like that. So let me just give you your space. Let me just, you know, let me just keep my distance. Let me not say certain things to aggravate you. But I'm in the process of learning this now that I don't care what nobody says about me. I know that I'm me. I know that I'm a loving person. I know that I'm a fun person. I know that I'm a natural born protector. I'm a protector of anybody. And at the end of the day, just some people just have issues within themselves that they have to work on. So, you know, it's sometimes when people do things, it's not personal to you, even though it is, but it's just because they have their own issues going on and they just don't know how to express it or go about it the right way. So instead, they lash out and bring their issues onto the next person.
And that's exactly what I said earlier. When a woman is being abused or a person is being abused, we lash out and we make our children our victims. So a couple of things that we need to talk about. First off, any abuse is always about power and control. So this person who was trying to take you out your cool zone and make you cuss and make you fuss, that's their power. That's their control over you. Our organization has done a lot of work identifying where violence begins. And it honestly begins in the womb. When a woman is pregnant and she is being victim, well, first off, back it up. As a woman, we know that statistics say that one in four women in her lifetime will be in an abusive relationship. But when we are talking about communities of color, specifically African-American women, that role really rolls down to every other woman in her lifetime will be in an abusive relationship. And so if that person is in an abusive relationship before she gets pregnant, the likelihood of that abuse escalating once she gets pregnant goes up 60.6%. 60.6%. So while we're pregnant, we're being beat up, we're being slapped around, we're being pushed out of cars, we're being raped, we're being pushed downstairs. And our children experience all of that with us while we're pregnant. So they're from their inception, they have been inducted into this world of violence, and we groom our children for a world of violence. So because we have been hurt, you know, you heard that saying, hurt people hurt people. So every person who has ever called us a stupid mofo, we're ugly, we're dumb, I can't stand you, shut the F up, those are hurt people who don't know how to hurt. They've never got to Danette's space where she has regroomed and remolded and retrained herself to love herself. And so we beat up our children, and then our children grow up thinking that, wow, nobody liked me, and I'm not even worth it. So then we run into somebody else, our abuser, who originally shows us this love and this affection and this attention, even if it's bad attention. Because the only difference between good attention and bad attention is really nothing. We need attention. Mm-hmm. And however we get it is good. So even in the bad, it's good because this person is paying attention to me. And it's very difficult to separate the love I feel from someone from the abuse. I know I shouldn't be in this. I know this person shouldn't hit me, but I still love this person. And as women, we're caregivers. That's why we are mothers, because we're caregivers. And so this abusive situation is going on, and we're saying, what can I do? How can I love this person more? How can I show them this affection? How can I show them that I'm down for them? I'm 100% for them. When they've told us, we don't believe people when they tell us who they are. They will tell us that, you know what, nobody ever loved me before. And so what we hear is, oh, my God, how can I show this person that they are loved and that I love them? When really what they mean is, when they tell you nobody has loved me, that means that they are not a lovable person. They are not engaging. They don't want love. They don't seek love. And they are violent and abusive. When they tell us that, you know what, baby, I'm going to be with you for life, and, you know, nobody else will ever be with you, that means that they're going to kill you before they let you go. So we have to really learn the language that abusers use. And then before I get off this, I'm going to go real quickly through this. Beverly, you said you didn't know that emotional abuse was abuse. So there's verbal abuse. There's emotional abuse. And in that emotional abuse, there's that terrorism, which means they're going to tell you that they're going to take that child from you. There is the financial abuse. And even if you are the person bringing in all that money, does not stop that person from abusing you financially and taking control of your money and not letting you have access to it. There is the medical abuse, not letting you use a condom when you know that your partner is out there screwing everybody in town, or not letting you take your medicine or taking you to the doctor. And then there is the sexual abuse. And we don't think that, you know, when we're in a relationship, we're supposed to please our partner sexually. But sometimes you don't want to have sex, and that person tries to force you, and then you think, oh, well, you know, because I'm their woman, I'm their partner. No, that's sexual abuse.
And then I'll add the other two that I've been real big on is the spiritual abuse. You know, most people don't think that there's spiritual abuse out here, but when someone is very educated on the Bible, they will manipulate you into thinking that their actions is okay because of this section in the Bible or because of this book in the Bible. And then that technology abuse and that cyber abuse of threatening that they'll put this information out there and that information out there, those are big as well. And one of the things that she spoke about is a lot of us, and even, I won't say us, but a lot of women, including me until I was 28, I was a woman with a little girl still actively inside of me. So all of the hurt that I went through as a kid, my father not being there, my mother being a single parent, when I got with my child's father, I was looking for love in all the wrong places. So as she was stating, what can I do better? What can I do? All I want him to do is just to love me this way, because I'm an awesome person. Like, excuse me, I'm a great person. I'm a great this. So I always tried to give more and to do more, but not knowing that I was only feeding that little girl that was hurt inside of me. So once I was able to acknowledge that little girl inside of me and deal with her, then that's when I was able to start rebuilding myself as a woman, because I was closing doors on the little girl, and I was closing chapters and finishing chapters on this little girl and understanding why she felt this way, and then understanding that, you know, there's nothing that I can change as that little girl, and that forgiveness part of going back in and forgiving those, and that forgiveness was for myself. It wasn't for that person to think, you know, that they won or to think anything, because most of them, I didn't even go back to them and say, I forgive you. It was just more so of me forgiving someone in my heart as that little girl that I felt hurt me, even my father. You know, I had to go back and deal with and forgive my father, and to really show that forgiveness more so than just say that forgiveness, I had to go back and do that. And then that's what taught me to forgive my abuser. So I can sit next to him today and laugh and joke with him because of that power of forgiveness, but it also has birthed someone great out of that forgiveness, because I definitely couldn't be who I am. So a lot of women need to understand and make sure that they can identify that little girl that's inside of them from childhood in order to even get to the point of the woman that they truly believe that they want to be and who they are.
Girl, you know, that's the deepest thing. That is the truest thing. That is the most profound thing. Thank you for sharing that. And just to add to that is, if a child has been abused as a child, whether it is emotional abuse, physical abuse, and especially sexual abuse, at the age the abuse begins is the age that we stop growing. So if we are sexually abused at 3 years old, or we're physically, emotionally abused at 5 years old, that's the age that you stay. And we, our bodies continue to grow, but our minds always stay at that age. And so we have to, as parents, as women, as mothers, we have to seek help for not only ourselves but our children. So when when we go through these emotional relationships, we have to make sure that our children receive the support that they need, whether that is talking to a counselor, doing group therapy, having those open doors. It is so critical for their emotional and mental and spiritual health. And I do love that you added in spiritual, because, yes, spiritual warfare is going on, and abusers will pick their battles. And they may not know everything in the Bible, but I know you know.
Right,
those verses. They tell them, they have them down pat. It's like there's a handbook somewhere, the abuser's rules, and where they can go and find all this information. And you're like, wait, what? How'd you come up with that? And it sounds reasonable, too, when you're in it.
And if you don't know, you gonna fall for it. If you don't know what it really should be, one thing I tell people is that, you know, when you have forgiven someone and you have truly moved on and you're no longer in bondage with that hurt, is when you can look at that person and see that person for who they are and not who they what they did to you. So when I see my dad, I don't see him as a deadbeater. I don't see him as not being my daddy no more. I see him as my father. What can I do to make you great today, Dad? When I see my abuser, I don't see when I see my child's father, I don't see my abuser. I'll be like, what can we do better today to make this co-parent thing great? So that's one of the things that helps, you know, a lot of people, and, you know, has helped me move on. Like, I don't see what I went through. You know, I ain't stuck there no more, so I don't even see it no more, unless it's to help somebody else get through it. But that's one of those things. And even our parents, you said previously that, you know, what your mother went through, but then, you know, you have to go back to think, well, mom didn't have a handbook either. So my mother, I knew my mother wasn't perfect either, but she didn't have a handbook. So one thing she always said to me is, no matter what we go through, don't be like me, be better than me. So that's something that I implement on my kids. I ain't perfect, but please don't be like me. Be better than me at whatever it is, because then you don't have any regrets, or you don't hold anything against that person. It's just more so of, they're not perfect, so I know I ain't going to do this. I'm going to be better than this. Whichever way I got to do it, I'm going to be better. So that's good to me.
And we can't hold our parents to the standard today that they were dealing with in the past, because we have access to information and resources now that were never in place for some of our parents, depending on how old your parents are. Because, see, as we are now talking about domestic violence openly, it wasn't until the O.J. Simpson situation that domestic violence actually became a common conversation.
Was it even common then?
Well, when I say common, as in that there are people like us having telephone conversations and internet conversations, and there's domestic violence advocates, there weren't that many prior to this. There were some, mm-hmm. but we also, in especially in communities of color, we didn't really talk about this. There, mm-hmm. there weren't resources and places for us to go to. There weren't shelters mm-hmm. For us to go to. Police officers, if you called them, it was like, that's y'all's personal business.
Yeah.
Y'all handle mm-hmm. that. And so a lot of times, and talking about police officers and communities
they
of color, even today, you know, it may not be the safest thing to call a police officer. And so sometimes mm-hmm. we don't call people. We just keep this on ourselves, and we're like, we're dealing with it. But we can't be mm-hmm. quiet, because when we're quiet, we're complicit in that violence. We become part of the violence when we are quiet. So, you know, one other thing you said, Danielle, is that you can now see them for the person that, well, how did you put that?
You can I don't see them as an abuser. I just see them for who they are today. I don't see my pain and my abuse. I just see
right.
them as for who they are. So if they are a liar and a thief, that's just who they are, but it's not going to affect me.
Right, mm-hmm. but one of the things that we, when we are in abusive situations, we see that person for what we want them to be, not mm-hmm. who they are. So we see
oh, yeah.
them as the potential of, you could be so great, you could be so wonderful, you should
that
love
hope.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we get out of that, now I can see you as just this person who is
mm-hmm.
who has a sense of tendencies, and I'm not going to deal with that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to make that move. And so I just really want to say that there is that opportunity, and how you do that, women that are listening to this conversation, the first thing you have to do is to realize the first person that is most important in your relationship is you. You are the most mm-hmm. important person. We can't think about us being selfish, because it is not being selfish to have that self-preservation, to know that if somebody is verbally, emotionally, physically, sexually, spiritually, cyberly bullying, abusing you, you've got to make a decision. Is it going to be you, or is it going to be them? Because as long as you stay, it's them. And you have to be first and foremost, and we have to figure out ways that you can move. And we can't stay in a situation that could eventually, and in many, many cases, eventually take our life and take
and
our
life. I like how you said that, because I stayed silent for, and that's where silent no more came from, because I literally stayed silent the whole time, and I never called the police one time, and that's only because I was a child advocate. So working for the juvenile system, I knew if you called a police officer for domestic violence, then DCS is already involved. And if you're listening and don't know what DCS is, but that's the Department of Child Services. So I knew working in my field that DCS would be called, and I'm one of them that sat on the other end of the table. So that last time that I couldn't take it anymore, I called, you know, the police, and they came, and DCS came, and I had to sit down with them. And the whole time I sat there, I'm like, oh, my God, like, I'm normally the one sitting on the other side of the table with DCS, and here I am the victim, or here I am the person that they're questioning, and that they're, like, I felt so low before a person that works with DCS and is in the system with DCS and on the other side of the table with them. If you're not even on that side of the table, and if you're just a regular individual, then you have to know that you can get through it. You have to know that they're only there to make sure and have the child's best interest at heart. And if they feel that that child is unsafe, they're not doing anything to punish you. They're only doing it to make sure that your child gets what they should get as a child, and to make sure that that's not emotional abuse, and that's not, and I hate the stigma with DCS, because the system has them looking horrible, not them as individuals. And that's one of the things that I try to tell a lot of people, is that it's not DCS that's coming to attack you. It's more so of them trying to make sure that your child is protected and they do get the things that they need, and just have that conversation with them, because there is services that they provide that could truly help you as an individual. And, you know, some people hate them, and then some people I've seen got the great experience out of them. So that's one of those things I like to share with them as well, because they knew who I was sitting at my table when they were interviewing me and my kids and took my kids to the other room to interview. They knew who I was. However, I still had to go through that same process. And, of course, the case closed quick, but it's still a process that no parent wants to get involved with. But as long as you got your best interest for your child, you know, at heart, and know that you protect your child as much as you can, but you've got to get help. You got to call somebody that's going to help, not call just to vent and say I've been abused, but that is going to actually help and get you a plan to get out of that domestic violence.
And so can we take a moment and talk about setting a plan, what's important? And because there's a lot of people I know that's listening right now and they're thinking, wow, what can I do? How can I get out of this? So let me jump in with a couple of things and then everybody else can. The very first thing you need to do is to start squirreling some money away. I don't care if it's a dollar a week. Put some money away. Make copies of all of your important documents and put them away. And when I say put them away, not somewhere in your house, but with someone that you trust. It could be a friend or a family member, copies of your medicine, your prescriptions, anything that's important, an important document, even copies and pictures of your children. All of these important things, you know, they need to be put aside. And make sure that you have some bills in your name so that you can make sure that you can establish credit, because a lot of times our abusers, everything is in their name, and we think, oh, you know, my partner's taking good care of me, I don't have to have no bills. But that means you have no credit. And so when you turn around and you're trying to find a place, a safe space for you to live, and you can't show where you've ever paid for anything, it's very difficult to find a space.
And then I'll piggyback off of that, because I was totally opposite. So I was with a big-time drug dealer. So everything was in my name. And because everything was in my name, when things got crazy or when he felt like somebody knew where we stayed, or when, you know, we shifted a lot. So that was another thing that I had to make sure that I went back and established the healthy living in my kids, is because moving from place to place is, you know, very unstable, and that can take an effect on your kids as well. So because we moved so much, everything was in my name, that I eventually, when it was time to go, I had to rebuild myself financially as well. So not only emotionally, but I'm was rebuilding myself financially, knowing that I had to get all this stuff off my credit, knowing that I had to. So that's another thing that we as women have to make sure that we're, you know, we're paying attention to when we're in any relationship, is to make sure that what you put in your name, you can take care of it yourself. You know the ropes of moving and breaking leases and all of that, because it affects you in the long run, and you'll still have to revisit that place. But when it comes to the planning, that honeymoon stage took effect for me, so I left too many times and never had a plan. When I eventually told my family, I went to a dinner with one of my cousins and at the restaurant, and she was like, okay, the spirit is telling me you're keeping a secret on something. Again, my family, nobody knew. I'm like, girl, you tripping. I don't know what spirit you're talking about. You better come on back over here. And she was like, no, the spirit is really telling me that you are dealing with something you're not telling me. So eventually I broke down at P.F. Chang's restaurant, and I told her exactly what's going on. That was a Friday. Sunday, we had a family meeting. My family is all women. We had a family meeting Monday. I went to school, which I was in college. I drove to school. I had a friend at school take me back to the place. They moved me completely out of my home. Moved me out. I went back with my mother. When I moved out, I had no plan. And I love that you brought up plan, because I had no plan. So when I moved back with my mother, that honeymoon stage kicked in. If you don't know what that honeymoon stage is, it's part of that cycle where the I love yous, the flower, everything that you want that man to be
that's who he is during the honeymoon stage. And I got that, and I eventually went back. And, of course, that's when my family was just like, forget you, and I kick you off the earth, and I'll never help you again. But because I had no plan, I was really left alone then. So that important thing, like she was saying, is, yes, make sure that you put some money away and you have a friend that you can depend on, that you can take, or a family member that you can take all of those resources to. Make sure that when you transition that you don't forget the steps of your kids, and you make sure that you put that individual on the no contact, in the school system. But ultimately, get you a protection order. You know, most people don't want to do that, but I got a protection order. And when I say it helped 130%, it helped 130%, but it also helped me when I went to the store, when I went to my children's school. It helped all the way around. You can't stop a person from doing something, but it is a barrier that makes them think first. And then just put in some safety things around the house. You know, there was a knife outside in my bushes that he never knew about, just in case I needed to protect myself the time that I did leave. You know, your electronic devices, if you need to get you a throwaway little flip phone and put it over there in that package that you're taking to your friend's house, get that as well. So that way when that transition comes, you are fully ready for that transition. A lot of the victims that I speak with, they either don't have any income or they don't have a job. You have to prepare yourself for that as well. If you've never worked, that's something that you're going to have to get embedded in your head. If you want to get out of it, you're going to have to work. And so then you have to start thinking about, you know, what is it that you want to do? You know, what is it that you really want to do? Rebuild that resume. It takes a plan, or you are planning to fail, and you'll be right back where you are.
I love this. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I love that you mentioned that you left several times. People think, oh, my God, I just keep leaving. And then the family is like, oh, you going back again? And so we have to understand that it takes an average. They say it takes an average of leaving 7 or 8 times.
Seven, yeah.
Some people leave the very first time you raise their voice at you or they hit you. And some people never leave. They're carrying them out in a body bag. Some people stay mm-hmm. with them forever, and then one day the abuse stops. For anyone listening, the abuse will never stop based on anything mm-hmm. you do. The abuse only stops when you either, A, leave, or when there's a life-changing event and that abuser wants to change. But we can't love them enough, sex them enough, feed them enough, lose enough weight, gain enough weight, dye our hair. We can't do nothing to stop it unless we take control of the situation. And so just talking about the plan, make sure that you have one. Sit down with a domestic violence advocate. Mm-hmm. You can Google domestic violence advocate and put in your zip code, and then one will pop up. Or contact one of us, and we can help you to locate one in your area, because they're all over the world.
Yes.
And when we're talking about leaving, let me say this. Sometimes we want to leave and we want to go to our parents. I want to first encourage everyone to know who your abuser is. And is your abuser a violent, crazy person who does not care if they hurt themselves or anybody else? Because mm-hmm. we sometimes take that abuse from our house to our parents' house. And yeah. if our parents are seniors, mm-hmm. you know, you have to be careful, because some people don't mind kicking in your parents' doors or beating you in front of your parents. And so make sure that there's really, really, really a safe space for you and your family. And know that if you are being abused, everybody, not just your children, but your whole family is in that abuse with you. And even though, Danielle, you said that, you know, nobody knew, I know people in your household, your family members were, like, constantly concerned, even though, mm-hmm. you know, we show up with a smiling face.
Mm-hmm.
But our spirits will let us know that there's a problem. So
she knew, but the other people, I really had them in tears, because when I say I
And that's something that I even had to work on with showing my emotions, because I showed no emotion. When I came around the happiest, gullible, because I was leaving that dark spot. And when I was leaving that dark spot, I was in light. So I didn't carry it with me. But then once I got back there, so I really tricked it. And me and my mother are very, I mean, when I say very close, we are best friends. But because I stayed on the phone with her for 2 weeks constantly, when I had those black eyes, she didn't think of one thing. She didn't think not one thing. And, you know, he didn't just hit me that one time in my eye. I had surgery. But after my surgery, for the next few months, I got hit repeatedly in that same eye that I had just had surgery on. So don't think that a woman is, you know, dumb, or don't think that she can leave, or, yes, that's what I wanted to say. Friends, you friends out there that are listening, stand by. There's only two options that'll happen if a woman is in a domestic violence situation and she's still in love, because a woman has to want to leave. It's hard to say that, but she truly has to want to get out of it. But it's either if you push her out of it, you will no longer be her friend until she's out of it. You have to make sure that you grab a hold of her arm and be real with her and let her know, as she was saying earlier, that you don't deserve this. You're more than this. And remind her of who she was before she got in it. But don't push her, because when you push her, you're pushing her closer to her abuser and further away from you. So I want you to make sure that you keep that in mind. If you have someone that's going through domestic violence, is to just grab a hold of her hand and continue to embed in her who she is and who she was before she got with that abuser, and the things that you know of who she wants to be. So that way she know that you were by her side that whole time, but not by her side in a way of getting in it with her and thinking that it was okay, it's cool, let me wipe this off, and then you'll be back with him. It's cool, girl, he love you, you know he love you. Don't do that, but just make sure that you are still watering that seed that's within her for her to be a great individual, and not to be fully broken and just knowing that you're just there because you're there.
Please don't be that friend that says, girl, you're so stupid, you're so dumb. Why are you still dealing with that stupid stuff? Why are you dealing with him? I hate you. We're going to go over there and run amok, and we're going to kick his butt. Don't do that. Don't be that friend either, because that's not really being a friend. You know, we will blame the victim. First off, know that nobody wants to be a victim. Nobody does. But again, as I said earlier, it's difficult to separate the violence from the abuse, because I want the abuse to stop, but I still love this person. And so we can't pass judgment on anybody. What we can do is we can be there and say, what do you need? How can I support you? Look, if you need a box of Kleenexes, I'm here. If you and your kids are hungry, I'm here. If you need a safe place to sleep, I'm here. But we also have to protect ourselves, where if your friend is constantly coming over and saying, look, he beat me up, because I need to say this, because we have same-sex relationships. Women and women have abusive relationships too. And so whether that person, that partner is abusive, we can't constantly run in and out that revolving door telling you stories about the abuse and walking back to that abuse and then coming back giving you that abuse, because that now you're in the abuse with me. So we have to learn how to tell our friend, look, I love you, and I know that you still want to be here, but until you're ready to face reality and move out of that, you can't constantly come over here and tell me every time there's an event going on. I am here for you. You want to come over and watch TV or have something to eat or relax or have a safe, quiet space, I'm here for you. But you can't constantly bring that violence to me, because now nothing is accomplished.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. I totally thank both of you ladies for definitely sharing. Like you really gave some real-life answers, some things that our listeners can take and take a hold of and use in their lives. you know, from how to leave, how to exit, how to be that friend on the outside, how to be the family member, and just what abuse really is. I totally thank you guys for sharing that with our audience today. We've gone like way past our normal podcast time, but
sorry.
It's okay because no, because we have to give some real answers. You know, a lot of people are talking about the fluff of it. A lot of people emotionally talk about domestic violence, and they're not dealing with some real truths, you know, and it's time to really share some real things back to it so that people can really get the help that they need. But, you know, hey, that's what I'm here for, and that's what we're here for. But before we go, I want to give you ladies an opportunity to share where people can connect with you at if they want more of you, if they want your assistance, your services, and your help.
Go ahead,
okay,
Candy.
Well, this is Candy Lewis, and that's K-A-N-D-E-E, Lewis, L-E-W-I-S. My company is the Positive Results Corporation. You can reach us at www.prc123.org. You can email me at info@prc123.org. You can call us at 323-787-9252, or you can even find us on Facebook at the Positive Results Corporation. We're also on Instagram at the Positive Results, and I'm personally on Twitter at Candy R. Lewis.
All right. And then you can reach me. Then, well, my organization is Silent with a T, No More, INC. And you can reach us at www.silentnomoreinc.org. And then our email is silentnomoreinc@yahoo.com or 317-728-6733. We have a Facebook account as well as an Instagram, and it's Silent No More INC. Or you can personally connect with myself, Danyette Smith, and it's D-A-N-Y-E-T as in Tom, T as in Tom E, Smith, S-M-I-T-H, because I'm always just uplifting and encouraging women to be the best that they can be as a woman.
All right, now.
So, Ms. Nye, do you want to tell them where they can reach you, connect with you at? What you got going?
I can be reached at Instagram and Facebook under Nye Beverly. I also have an email at NyeBeverly@gmail.com.
All right.
And
can I
say one more thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. And on Saturday, April the 7th, my company, the Positive Results Corporation, is hosting a conference. It's called Engaging Men and Boys to Prevent Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault While Promoting Healthy Manhood. We have to bring the men to the table. We have to talk to the men about being advocates to support us to prevent violence and abuse. We also have to educate men and young boys and young men how not to be abusive, and how to love and encourage and motivate women. So go to our Facebook page or our website, again, www.prc123.org, and you'll see the flyer and all the information.
That's yes. Amazing, yeah.
Awesome, awesome.
Thank you, ladies, again, for joining us. I totally appreciate that. And for all those listening, it is Hershey, me, your girl, Miss Jennifer Pink, affectionately known as a Single Mom Sage because of my unique mission to support single moms in their journey and moving from surviving to thriving. Yes, we can thrive. We thrive in spite of and because of. We are so excited that you decided to join us today for The Real with Sage Single Moms, a part of Sage Mentoring. I am all tongue-tied, y'all. Check us out. Follow, subscribe, like us on all social media at Sage Mentoring. And check out our website to see what else we've got going on at Sage, S-A-G-E, singlemoms.net. Until next time, we wish you love, peace, and baby powder freshness, y'all. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
fight, but I wouldn't trade it in for my life. Feels like the world's on my